Welcome to the Rewilded Human Podcast, where Dr. Lucille and Lynn will tackle your most difficult and intimate questions with candor, tough love, and a little dash of humor. In today's episode,
stand in our own value and remember that her issues are her issues. They're not your issues. So while it may be extremely unpleasant to be around her, I would just say, hold your head up high, do your best.
Welcome everyone to episode 8 of the Rewilded Human Podcast. We are so happy to have you guys back with us. And if you're here for the first time, we wanted to give you a quick intro as to who we are in case you missed some previous episodes. My name is Lynn Hardy. I'm a naturopathic doctor and a nutritional consultant, and I come with a lot of life experience. I've been married for almost 30 years. I have a 26-year-old son. I've got some doggies, and I have lived all over the world. So a lot of your questions that are coming in, I can totally relate to, and I can't wait to share my wisdom with you. And let me introduce you to my wise and beautiful co-host, Dr. Lucille. Dr. Lucille, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself as well, please.
Yeah, I've been a holistic psychiatrist and psychotherapist for over 35 years now. And I practice a particular modality called EMDR. So I'm very well versed in trauma work. And I also am an independent Healy World member. So I love frequency devices. I love working directly with the quantum field. Like Lynn, I have a wealth of life experience, and I am so at home not being married, having had two past experiences with marriage. And I just, at this point in my life, I love living with my dog and romping on the beach with him. So that's me in a nutshell.
Sounds amazing, Lucille. So we are ready to get started with your questions. Guys, keep sending those questions into us. We love getting to them and answering them and, you know, breaking them apart and finding solutions for you guys. So on any subject, basically health, mental health, relationships, life, work, anything, send us your questions. You can do this by DMing us on Instagram or also by email. You can find our email just below if you're watching us on YouTube. And we will get started now with Karen. And would you like to go ahead, Lucille?
Sure, yes. And thank you, everybody who submitted questions. I think it's very brave of you to be putting your life out on the line and asking for help. So here we have Karen, who she's got a very common dilemma. I hate my mother-in-law. I can't do anything right according to her. My husband never stands up for me. What can I do to get her to stop criticizing me? Well, you know, I had one mother-in-law, and you, Lynn, you still have a mother-in-law?
Not anymore, sadly, but she was a very nice lady, very nice lady.
Yeah, right.
She loved me more than her son, so I was very lucky.
So I have clients ask this question a lot, and I've seen it in my personal life as well. And one of the things that is really important to remember is not to take it personally. That's one of my first rules. Because, you know, we think that the mother-in-law is just finds us totally objectionable, right? Just us, you know. But it probably is also the case that she has a very conflicted bond with her son. There may be a lot of, you know, tentacles of, you know, perhaps a little extra possessiveness. She may be the kind of mother-in-law who feels that nobody is good enough for her son, and only she's good enough for her son if she could marry him.
It's true.
I'm only kidding. I think that, you know, Karen, it really is very, very important for you to hold your head up high and realize that your son married her. No matter what she thinks, the bond is truly between you and her son. It would be lovely if our mother-in-laws loved us, but there may be so many reasons why she's not in position to do that, at least not right now. And I don't know if you have children, but sometimes having grandchildren for a mother-in-law may sometimes ease up her animosity towards her daughter-in-law. But I'm not, if you don't have children, I'm not suggesting you go and have children just for that reason. So I would say to you to really focus on whatever positive things are happening in the relationship between the two of you, and really emphasize those things. Like maybe she's an excellent cook, for example, and you can focus on getting her to teach you how to, you know, create her recipes. I'm only suggesting that. I'm not saying go ahead and do that. It's just an example. But do remember that it is very important not to go to war. It's very important not to go to war with our in-laws. And, you know, to really stand in our own value and remember that her issues are her issues. They're not your issues. So while it may be extremely unpleasant to be around her, I would just say hold your head up high, do your best. And the other thing that you might want to consider is talk to your husband and ask him what his position is on the whole matter. Now, husbands in these situations tend to be extraordinarily passive.
Yes.
They just don't want to get in between, right? They don't want to get in between. They're scared. They don't want to alienate their mother. They don't want to get into a fight with their wife, right? So they're kind of like Switzerland. They want to be neutral in the whole thing. But I would suggest you just have a talk with him and maybe get a little bit of, you know, understanding of what the relationship has been like between him and his mom. So at least you understand why she may be hostile towards you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and possibly, you and your husband might, you know, come up with a resolution or solution together if you engage him in a way that won't alienate his mother.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my two cents worth. Tell me, Lynn, what do you think?
I have a question for you, Lucia. I've noticed this throughout the years, and I'm sure you've noticed this as well. When women have like not a very solid marriage, or when they get divorced and they have a child, especially a boy, that boy becomes like their soulmate, you know, not in a sexual way, but, you know, in an emotional way. I see this crazy emotional bond. And I think those women become the mother-in-laws from hell because they do have this really strong, like, soulmate connection with their son, because all the love that they would have given to a man, to their husband, now they're projecting this all to this boy. So I think that can be an issue. Yeah. So I don't know if that's the case with Karen or not, but that's something to think about. And then the suggestion that I would have is to do, like, usually this is a dynamic where you have like three people, you have, you know, always together. But do you ever get to spend like just private time alone with your mother-in-law? Because then things really change when it's a one-on-one rather than the three of you and you're both competing for the attention of this one man. Mm-hmm. So like Lucille said, you know, maybe if she enjoys cooking, do some cooking with her, go shopping with her. So do something together with the two of you to give you a chance to actually bond. Because I think that's really important, because it's a completely different dynamic. Now, I don't have my mother-in-law anymore, sadly, but she was amazing. She never meddled in our lives or anything like that. She was very accepting. She loved me a lot. But, you know, I have a son and he's got a girlfriend. They've been together for 6 years. So I'm kind of like a mother-in-law. And I work really hard to make sure that we have a good relationship, you know, with the girl. Like, I want her to respect me, to look up to me. And, you know, I don't ever want to get between them, because I would never want my son to have to make a choice between me and her, because for sure he would choose her. So, you know, I'm speaking as a mother-in-law, I would never want to jeopardize my son's relationship by being the mother-in-law from hell. So unfortunately, other mothers are not like this, but, you know, hopefully, you know, don't expect too much from your husband. He's not going to stick up for you. Like Dr. Lucille said, he's going to be Switzerland, because they just don't want to be involved. The guys just don't like this drama between women. So I think, you know, let him be. Don't be hard on him for that. Don't expect him to stick up for you. Instead, try to make peace with her. Like, woman to woman, reach out to her and try to find a connection with her. That's the best thing that I could suggest.
I think that's a great idea. And I think, Lynn, that you should do workshops for mother-in-laws.
That's a good idea.
You have such a really positive, conscious attitude. That's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. So we're off to the next question, which is from Jennifer, who's really worried about losing her friends. Her question is, how do I deal with the loss of my friends? They all ghosted me after I ended a very long and intense relationship with my partner and then tried to get back in touch with them. I admit I wasn't there for them much while I was in the relationship. Should I just move on or try to make amends? This is, I think, very common, especially when we're younger, right? We get into this relationship and then we just dump all our friends and it's 100% focus just on the relationship. And then when the whole thing falls apart, it's like, where are my friends? And meanwhile, the friends have gone on to have their own lives. So that's a very, very difficult situation to be in. Oh, Jennifer, I'm going to pass it over to Dr. Lucille first. And then I will give you my two cents at the end.
Okay. So, you know, friendships do require nurturing. It's kind of like nurturing plants in a garden. And if you neglect the plants, you know, they're just not going to grow or they're not going to thrive. And so I think that Lynn is absolutely right. We need to be more conscious of our friendships, especially our female friendships, when we are in a partnership with a man, and realize that those friendships are like, they can be like gold, right? They're our asset for, they could be our asset for many, many years, if not for the rest of our lives, right? And so, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, there is that phrase, you know, men come and go, but, you know, your friends are your friends. And so I think it is really important to be very aware of what's happening with the, or even it could be male friendships, male platonic friendships as well, but be very conscious of them while you're having your relationship with your intimate partner. They are, those relationships can really, really nurture you, because our intimate partners cannot give us everything that we need. They can't be everything to us. They can't be our female best friends who, you know, love going shopping with us. And, you know, they can't be a lot of guys are not really into, you know, confiding in our most intimate emotional dramas with our friends. They couldn't really care less. So that's what you have your female friends for. And so it is a really important thing, I think, to keep nurturing your female friendships. And absolutely, you're not going to have the same amount of time and energy when you're in an intimate relationship to, you know, nurture your friendships with your female friends. But whatever you can do, it is important to do that. You know, every once in a while, if you haven't heard from them, text them, you know, give them a call, you know.
Go on double dates, whatever.
Exactly. It's just so crucial. And you will find it pays off so much when, you know, there are troubles in the relationship and you need a shoulder to cry on, or you need some objective, you know, advice or feedback, or so I would say, you know, treat your female friends like gold, and I'm mixing metaphors here, but also like those plants in the garden that need careful tending.
Absolutely.
Now, at this point, you know, Jennifer, I would say, you know, it all may not be lost. I'm not sure if absolutely all of your friends have ghosted you, but if there's one or two that are in particular have been really important to you, you might want to reach out and be, you know, vulnerable with them, and, you know, have a heart to heart and apologize or whatever. You might want to just at least try. And if the door is still shut, oh, well, I mean, that's painful, but, you know, you have to accept they've moved on and they don't trust you anymore. And that's really painful.
Yeah,
but it's a painful lesson that's really important to learn. I think we all learn that at some point. I certainly did. So anyway, that's my advice to you, Jennifer. Good luck with that. And you know, take your lessons into the next set of relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really hard because I'm sure you've noticed this, Lucille, that, you know, when we're younger, it's much easier to build friendships and to form friendships. It's a little bit more difficult as we're getting older. So you really want to, I'm just assuming that Jennifer is younger, that it's really important to cherish those friendships because they could possibly last you a lifetime. But, yeah. You know, also sometimes what happens is when you get into relationships, sometimes your friends turn away from you. I know it happened to me because I got married and I had a child and my friends were still out partying. Then, you know, I became kind of boring and they didn't want to be near me. So, you know, sometimes friendships just naturally change and because you, as your life circumstances yeah. change and we don't grow together. And that's absolutely fine as well. I think if those are true friends that you that really loved you and have connected with you, then it will be just easy to pick that back up. Just if you reach out to them and you speak from the heart and you tell them that you're really sorry and, you know, you made a mistake and you will never neglect them again. And if that connection is still there and they love you and they respect you as a friend, then you'll be able to get it back. If not, then you need to, you know, you need to let it go, give it a try. And if not, you need to let it go and really just learn from it, like Dr. Lucille said, and do better next time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Well, best of luck to you, Jennifer. We hope that helps.
Yep. Okay. So now we're moving on to Linda, who has the perfectionist's classic stress. I'm constantly second-guessing myself. I can't seem to relax. Whatever or whenever I do anything, I'm worried that I haven't done it right. How can I stop doing this? Well, Linda, thank you for asking that question, because I think there are a lot of people who are in that position, but they're so perfectionistic, they don't want to admit that they have a problem, right?
You're one of them.
And I know. Yes. I'm a recovering perfectionist. Yes. I think we should have our own 12-step group. And I think, you know, Lynn, you have to, you know, confide in us all and, you know, declare yourself also a perfectionist, because I think you are, right?
I am, but you know, I'm a confident perfectionist. So when I do something, I'm very confident that it's awesome. So I don't keep second guessing myself. I did it, you know, like I wrote that book, I finished this article, I finished this thing, and then I look at it and I'm like, this is amazing. I did great. So I want to get it perfect, but I'm also very confident that I nailed it. So I don't have the insecurities afterwards. I don't do the second guessing. But I know a lot of people who do. So yes, we can definitely speak to them.
So yeah, do you second guess yourself? That's another workshop.
Yeah,
that's a workshop. Another workshop, Lynn, that you have to organize and you know teach people all your tips on that.
Do you find that you second guess yourself, Lucille?
You know, I've had to stop listening to that inner critic. You know, mm-hmm. I've had to so many times just slap it and say enough. It's good enough, and I'm going to go and relax now. But it takes a lot. It really takes a lot. And, you know, I came from a family, and a lot of my clients also do too, where they've all been shamed, you know, a lot for, you know, being stupid, for not doing things right. Yeah. And that can come from siblings, you know, siblings who are like bullies. That mm-hmm. can come from parents.
Parents, yes.
Or sometimes it's just neglect, you know, that you try all these wonderful things. You run home to mama with this great piece of art you did at school. And she kind of looks at it and goes, okay, get upstairs, clean up, and we're going to have dinner soon. And totally uninterested. Yeah. And so the child learns to work harder and harder and harder to get approval.
Yes.
And it drives you nuts. It really drives you nuts. So I really so empathize with you, Linda, because you can never relax. You can never relax. And it leads, if it goes on intensely and for a long time, it can lead people not only to be constantly anxious, but then to go into depression as well. Mm-hmm. And you really don't want to go down that road. So I think it's very good that you are addressing this issue for yourself. So a couple of things I would suggest is you might want to look into you know, how you learned to become a perfectionist. Like, what was it in your, as you were growing up? Because I can pretty well guarantee perfectionists don't just wake up at age 30 and become perfectionists. I mean, it's actually a lifelong pattern. And I think that you might want to just consider, like, what were the forces that acted on me that made me become this way? If there, you do recognize that maybe there was trauma or a lot of shaming. Sometimes, you know, people can work on themselves through journaling or, you know, self-awareness or doing self-help, you know, workshops or, you know, various educational experiences. They can learn to start, you know, releasing the pattern gradually. You can do it through exposure too. There are some forms of therapy where you are coached to go out in public and do something absolutely stupid.
Wow.
And then you live through the consequences, mm-hmm. right? Like, I remember there was one example I heard on a podcast, a man who wanted to, you know, become much more confident in himself. So his coach said, you know, I want you to go up to the first stranger you meet and ask for $100.
Wow.
Just ask for $100. And face the rejection. Whatever happens, face it. So there were a number of these exercises that this man had to do, and bless him, he did them all. And after a while, he just stopped becoming a perfectionist. He stopped having any insecurity about goofing up, making mistakes. Now, you might not be ready for that, and I understand.
That's awesome.
That you might not be ready for that, right? But you certainly can break the pattern. And the other thing, too, is, there's a lot of brain chemistry that goes bonkers when you have this perfectionism. You might want to look at some of the work of the Amen Clinic, because they have questionnaires which will pinpoint what areas of the brain may be behaving abnormally or overactive or underactive. And they have specific suggestions, both lifestyle and pharmaceutical suggestions for what you can do, because there is a particular part of the brain that gets overheated and overactive in this kind of pattern. And it's not that you have a mental illness. I don't want you to go away thinking you have a diagnosis. But sometimes you can, through diet and supplements and exercise, you can let your brain just balance itself out with the right support. Anyway, yes, so the Amen Clinics are a really good resource, I think, for a lot of people who feel that they're functioning abnormally.
Yes, absolutely. I love Dr. Amen. Excuse me, his videos are amazing, like really great information. Absolutely. That's a really great suggestion, Lucille.
Right.
What I wanted to add to that is, you know, because you have all this inner stress going on, this inner stress and inner worry, sometimes just cutting down caffeine can help with that. Because a lot of the, you know, when we're talking about the brain and the brain, sometimes, you know, like Dr. Lucia is saying, something's going on in the brain or some kind of chemical imbalance or something, and caffeine can just really throw everything off. And sometimes we're feeling anxiety, anxious, and worry, and all of these things. And it's something that we're taking or something that we're doing. It's not actually in our bodies. So, you know, cutting back on the coffee, drinking less caffeine, that could also possibly help. If that doesn't, then you need to come to Lynn's seminar. Linda, seminar below.
That's Lynn's next project after this podcast.
But I don't really have too much to add, because I think Lucille covered it. And hopefully these tips will help you. And please let us know. Write back to us and let us know if it's working, if you're having an easier time handling these things. And, you know, just don't be hard on yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're on to the next question, which comes from Marianne. And she has a common seasonal problem. I dread the holidays, says Marianne. Many of my relatives have different different opinions on what's going on in the world, and opinions about how I should live my life. God forbid if I disagree about World War III could break out. Any suggestions for how I can deal with this? So a seasonal problem. Yeah, the holidays, yes. It seems to bring out the best in us or the worst in us, right? I just posted this meme. I don't know if you saw it, Lucille, yesterday or the day before. If you want to save some money on your holiday shopping, you know,
use
Thanksgiving to, you know, talk about politics and conspiracy theories and religion and all of these things. And then you won't have to spend so much on Christmas presents. But I mean, obviously, that's a joke.
No, that was brilliant. I thought it was hilarious.
but it's one of those hashtag funny, not funny things. Right. And I know a lot of people dread the holidays because of this. And while it's really important to express our opinions, which I really like to do. You know, I think we are very passionate about speaking our truth. And I think it's really super important to do that. I think there's also a time and a place for everything. So for example, if you're seeing your family once a year and, you know, you're together for a couple of hours, do you really need to force your views on them? Like, this is, like I said, I struggle with this all the time. But you got to pick your battles. And if you want to enjoy the time together and you want them to want to spend time with you, then just don't bring up the topics that you know are going to be triggers. Then, you know, stay away from that. People have different diets, you know, you're on the keto diet, they're vegans, then don't discuss food. I think that's, or politics or the elections coming up or any of those things. Talk about the weather. That's what I try to do with my family during Christmas. You know, just try to keep it really light. Talk about things that make you happy, put on some nice music, dance, and just stay away from the topics that are going to cause problems. You know, save your opinions for social media. I don't know, like, you need to express your opinions, but probably not to your family. And the thing is, you're never going to change their opinion. Like, we've tried so many times to change people's opinions about certain things, and they're never going to listen to you. They're not going to change their opinions. They believe what they believe, you believe what you believe, and it's fine. And the truth is somewhere probably in the middle. You know, who's to say I'm right, you're right? Whose truth, whose God is better? You know, my God's better than your God. My truth is better than your truth. Just be wise and zip it. Lucille?
Oh, that's absolute classic advice. That's excellent. It is, it's probably the best thing you can do. I think, you know, we have to kind of, sometimes we have to go below all the opinions and the, attitudes, everything, and go right down to the heart of what is it that you love about these people? Hopefully you love something about these people.
Yeah.
go into it, you know, with your heart. And just remember that you just want to be in their company because you still love them. And everything that Lynn advised is absolutely what I would also advise. And now there are like really toxic family environments where you're kind of not even allowed to be like Switzerland and be neutral. Mm. It's kind of people poke at you until they get
your reaction out of you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. Very bullying. And those, you know, they require quite a bit of like gut fortitude. Like you have to be very strong in those situations. And you may have to really set a very strong boundary. And in order to do that, especially if you feel like you're outgunned and outmanned by everybody, mm-hmm. you might need to do a lot of practice. You may need some coaching. You may need to really clarify what are your boundaries going into this. Is it that you will not discuss politics whatsoever? You will not discuss anything about your personal life, why you're still not married at the mm-hmm. age of 38, you know, that sort of thing. You will just not discuss it. And you have to be very strong in yourself. The boundaries have to be set inside you first, so that you can be very strong about, you know, giving them the your boundaries in a very no-nonsense, very matter-of-fact way, right?
Yes.
And to the extreme, if it's really so bad that you are feeling nauseated like 3 weeks before you're about to go visit, One thing you might want to consider, if it's possible, do something else for Christmas.
Yeah.
You know,
go on vacation. That's
you
the best.
You will not believe how many people out there are spending Christmas away from their families. And it may be just people who are not of the same religion or, of the same ethnic background or whatever, and they have nothing much to do at Christmas. They don't want to be around. They go off to a holiday destination or whatever. I remember when I actually did that, because after my parents died, I was invited to other people's family gatherings at Christmas, and they were lovely, and I was very grateful to be there. But I also got a real taste of their own family dysfunction, and I thought, no, I want to have a fun Christmas. I don't want this.
Yeah.
So I went on retreats at Christmas, and I had some of the best times of my life at those Christmases with complete strangers. Because everybody was just there because they wanted a great time.
They wanted to get away from their toxic families. I love it. Yeah. We need to organize this. Like, here's the retreat idea, right? The Christmas retreat for people that need to get away from their toxic family. So, Marianne, stay tuned for that. It's something we are working on in the future. Lucille, I just have one question about this. Why do you think that we have this need that we have to be right? You know, like we have to... like in these family arguments and everything, we just want to prove that we are right. Why is that so important to people?
Well, you know, we always go back to how are people raised in this society, right? We're all raised that there's a right way and then there's a wrong way.
Yeah.
And you are either right or you are wrong.
Yeah.
And amplified, it's in, you know, it's in politics. It's in the school system. It's in the religions. It's in the families themselves, right? Where dad has to always be right. Mom's always wrong. And there's a pecking order where, the older sibling is always right. And there's so much ego wrapped up in it. You know, it's like our self-esteem becomes attached to being right and making damn sure everybody knows we're right and everybody agrees with us.
Yes.
And it's a very, very toxic way of going through life. This kind of bullying approach of I have to prove I'm right. There's a great strength in just being humble and just saying, you know, I have my opinion. I just have my opinion. It's based on my direct experience of life. You have your opinion. Bless you. Keep your opinion. Mm-hmm. And I find something that I like about you in spite of the fact that we disagree on so many things.
Yes, absolutely.
That is a much more humble, mature approach. So I like your approach, Lynn, where, you're basically enjoying whatever you can from the people that you're with, but you do not touch. You just do not touch certain topics.
Do some breath work, you know, relax beforehand, take some ashwagandha, go in there all zen, or drink if you have to, if you're a drinker. Sometimes that goes the other way if people drink too much. But, you know, just whatever, and just in one ear, out the next, get through those few hours and try to make happy memories, because you know what? You're not going to have your family around forever. And then you're going to look back and you're going to be like, why did we waste all those years fighting? You want to have beautiful Christmas memories for your future. So, Marianne, we hope that will help. And this brings us to the end of episode 8 already. And we had some complaints that the episodes are too short and people are expecting more questions and they want us to go on for another hour and an hour and a half. And I don't know if that's doable for us, because then we'd have to be recording a lot. So for the time being, we're going to try to keep it to about half an hour. I think that's a good, but if you guys want something different, then do let us know. We're open to suggestions. And guys, you know what? You're not going to want to miss episode 9. This is going to be a really exciting one. So we have a really interesting question, Troubled in Vegas, about what happens when like married women are hitting on you. What do you do with that? And also, we're going to talk about SAD, seasonal affective disorder, which is affecting a lot of people, and how to deal with those things. And we'll talk about some conspiracy theories, lots of good stuff coming up in the next episode. So make sure you are subscribing to this channel or the podcast on Spotify, wherever you're listening to us, so you don't miss a single episode. So thank you guys so much again for listening, for being with us, and keep sending us those questions. Thank you, Dr. Lucille, for all your wisdom.
Well, thank you. Lynn, for all your wisdom and all your organizational ability and all the ideas you have for new workshops for all these wonderful people. And thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for your amazing questions. We really appreciate them.
Thank you, guys. Wishing you all a lovely day. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Please be aware that Lynn and I are here to provide insights, advice, stories that are for educational and entertainment purposes only. None of our content should be considered to be personal, medical, or mental health therapy. If you are experiencing a mental health or physical health challenge, please consult the appropriate healthcare specialist. We are here to provide the best possible content in an atmosphere of positive conversation and personal growth.